Hi, and welcome to SPED Homeschool Conversations. We're so glad you're here tonight. We just want to welcome you if you're watching live on our Facebook page, as well as those of you who are watching recorded session of this broadcast, either on YouTube or on our podcast, and listening in on that. Tonight, we have two very special guests with us, Kathleen and Arlette from the Behavior Change Institute, and we're going to be talking about ABA services and how to access those services in your home as a homeschooler. So I just wanted to have them introduce themselves, and then we've got some slides that we're going to go through and answer lots of questions. But just know that as we're going through this, if you've got questions for them, definitely post them, and we'll make sure they get answered before we conclude for the evening. So Kathleen, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with the Behavior Change Institute?
Absolutely. And Peggy, thank you so much for having us this evening.
Oh, You're so welcome. I'm so glad you're both here.
Yeah, we are as well. So my name is Kathleen Karamy. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Business Operations with Behavior Change Institute. My background is I have an undergraduate degree in psychology and a master's degree in healthcare administration. Hmm. And I co-own and operate Behavior Change Institute with a PhD level behavior analyst.
Awesome.
So we at Behavior Change Institute specialize in providing in-home and community-based ABA therapy for individuals diagnosed with autism and their families. Mm-hmm. I will hand it over to our behavior analyst clinician, Arlette.
Yes, thank you. And hello, everybody. My name is Arlette Bujanda, and I am an associate clinician and a research assistant with Behavior Change Institute. I have been working with Behavior Change Institute since the beginning, and we are providing, like Kathleen said, ABA services for children mainly diagnosed with autism diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And we provide the services in the home. And I serve as the clinical role. I oversee some a caseload of kids, and then I also provide some on-site support for other clinicians as well.
That's great. And Arlette, we got to meet when I was speaking at a conference in El Paso, and that's kind of how we got connected. And I'm so glad that you agreed to do this show. We met this summer, so it's been a while, but I'm glad we finally got you on the schedule and got to talk about this, because I know a lot of parents have questions about ABA. Some of them don't even know what it is, and then they're like, well, and how would it help with my homeschool? And so I know all your slides are going to cover all of that information, but for those of you that are watching, definitely just pop in with questions as we're going along. But I'm going to figure out where my slides are here and hopefully not get rid of you. I think I did that last week to my guest. I popped her out for a while. So anyways, we're going to talk about accessing these services in your home and a little bit about you. You talked about Behavior Change Institute. And so enhancing independence, and that's what ABA is really about, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. There's a variety of skills, and I always, when I do a lot of assessments with parents, they, you know, get to ABA, they get to us, you know, my doctor referred us to you guys, but I don't know exactly what for. Is this like speech therapy? Is this like OT? Like they will ask us those kind of questions. But yeah, ultimately in behavior analysis, you can use it to work on any skill that you can think of that the person needs to be independent. So if they need something that is related to academic skills or self-help, adaptive living skills, social skills, anything in their development, or any skills that they need to go through their day independently, that's the ultimate goal of ABA.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And so here's just some information about you guys, and I'm so glad you guys did introductions, and definitely thank you for that. And so so let's talk a little bit about your services first. And I know we want to conclude with that as well as people join in with us. We want to make sure that they know where to find you and how to find you. So what services do you provide?
Yes, definitely. So although ABA can be provided for a variety of settings or a variety of skills or mm-hmm. different types of intervention, at Behavior Change Institute, we focus on in-home services or in the community services, depending on where the client needs it. But we provide early intervention. We provide intensive behavior intervention. So anything that requires mm-hmm. emotional regulation skills, perhaps decreasing mm-hmm. problem behavior, social skills. Training is also a component that we provide in our services. And all of our services include a parent training component. Basically, what that means mm-hmm. is that we share all of the strategies that we're doing in treatment with the parents, caregivers, or anybody in the family that, you know, are involved with the child on a daily basis. Because ultimately, what's going to be more successful for the child is that everybody's involved and is able to carry over those strategies.
I was going to say, integration is so important, because doing things at a clinic for an hour, you know, a couple times a week is not going to make a difference in a child's life. It has to be something that you're doing constantly. And so that's awesome that you have that key component.
Definitely. And we decided to do in-home services because there's definitely benefits to do clinic-based services, but in-home services is because it's more natural environment for this. Easier for the child, the skills to the daily routine and when they need them to use or where they need them to be using those skills. Mm-hmm. But then on top of that, those main components, we also provide school consultations. So we do have some schools in different cities where they will ask us to just do a consultation for an entire classroom or the entire school and provide training to the teachers. And Kathleen may have more information on that as well, on how the school consultations work. But also throughout our clients, we do and always collaborate with their schools, even if we are not in the school for that client. And again, it's just to provide that continuity for the child as well. But Kathleen may have more information on that.
For you then. So one thing that we do tell parents that they should pursue whenever they're working with a therapist is to set up IEP goals for their child with a therapist. And so that's something that you would be able to help a parent do as you're working with their child.
Yes, absolutely. And often what we like to do at BCI is we like that team approach. You know, everybody's, it's only going to be more beneficial for the client when everybody collaborates for their success. So, you know, gathering information from them as well as providing what, you know, we are working on and what strategies may be helpful for that child is only going to help him or her be more successful at school as well. But we can definitely help with setting goals. And that's something that we include in our functional behavior assessments that we provide. Mm-hmm. So the functional behavior assessment is a very complete assessment that we do, not only information from the parent and direct observation from the client, but we also review other records, including school records, to make sure that we are incorporating everything that is beneficial for the client.
That's awesome. And I know you've got some more dedicated slides to exactly the things that you do. So we'll move on to that. And so this talks about what is ABA. And so why don't...
Yes. So basically, ABA is it's typically associated with a treatment for children with autism. And honestly, it's a science that works for, you know, it's been proven to be beneficial for children with autism and other developmental disorders as well. But basically, ABA is a systematic approach where we are evaluating and applying those interventions that are empirically validated and evidence-based to ultimately just produce that change in behavior that is going to be socially significant for the client and long-lasting as well. So like we said before, our main goal will be that any behavior change that we work on will be providing that, you know, long-lasting effect of independence in the life.
So it's an individual-based
It's very individualized mm-hmm. approach. So we, although, you know, the interventions are all, let's say that we have a group of interventions that we can mm-hmm. utilize, but based on the functional behavior assessment, we individualize the treatment for each client. We have gotten perhaps, you know, siblings or even twins, and you will see their goals and they're completely different, or, you know, their behavior wow. treatment plan will be a little different. It's very individualized. For each child's needs.
That's great.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Next slide. So, academic skills.
Yes. So, because this is about homeschooling, right? So, a lot of the people, you know, we have, and Kathleen will provide us later on with more information on insurance as well. But some insurance may say, okay, you cannot work on academic skills because this is a medical treatment. So we're like, okay.
Or they figure this, you know, the way they build it and is the school should cover that. And so we don't. And they only, you know, if they'll cover it before school age and they'll cover it after school age, but that school age range, they don't. Yeah.
Yes.
We learn that.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, it's a little bit tough because, you know, ABA, like I said, you can target any skills, any behavior that the child needs, right? So, when we look at how ABA is related to school or teaching, we look at, you know, not only the academic skills themselves, but also what are other skills that the child needs to be ready to learn, you know, to have that learning readiness. There are so many pre-academic and readiness skills that we can work on, like attending to a task, right? It's hard for a child to be able to complete a task if they're not attending to the task, or how to ask for help, perhaps, when they have a task that is difficult for them. And then we see problem behavior happening because they don't have those communication skills. And, you know, I need a break, or, you know, I need help with this. Having to transition from one task to another, or, you know, from a little break back to work, and how that works, how that goes. So following directions within the learning time, perhaps working on tolerating to sit down, right, and remaining seated for the entire learning time. And even things as simple as waiting for, you know, for somebody to help him, waiting for somebody to give the answers, to check the work, or for materials to be ready for the lesson to start. So there's just a lot of different readiness skills that we can work on through ABA. And the foundation of our treatment is reinforcement. So reinforcement is basically manipulating the environment in a sense that is going to motivate that child to engage in perhaps those skills that are harder or that are not as preferred. So having to, you know, sit down for a while doing math may not be something extremely preferred or maybe just difficult. So how can we motivate that child to do this subversive task? And perhaps we want to add or remove something in the environment that is going to keep that motivation going.
Right. I know a lot of parents ask, you know, how do I motivate my child? And to have a third party person to come in and help you figure that out is a really good thing, because a lot of times you're so entrenched in it and all you can see is the behavior and you're just upset at the child and not really realizing what's going on that's causing that, and how you can use a positive approach to get them to be motivated in the right direction.
Definitely. So, a lot of the times what we see problem behavior, especially around academic tasks, is that they lack different foundation skills. So the child may not be able to communicate something. That's, you know, typically the main issue is that the child lacks those communication skills. So can we work on those communication skills before we, you know, how to teach him math or reading? And then also a lot of the times, you know, we observe this happen constantly, you know, like, oh, but my child, you know, loves Legos. He could play Legos all day long. But guess what? When I ask him to do his homework for Legos, he doesn't want to do homework. You know, it's still not motivating enough. So we do have to use specific assessment procedures to find out, okay, well, he may have, you know, a very specific interest for these Legos, but it's not enough for him to work for them. How can we promote that? You know, we increase his motivation. What other resources can we use to motivate him? So we definitely work with the family on assessing that motivation for the child.
That's awesome. Yes. And like I said, it's a question that comes up all the time. How do I get my child to do this? You know, and then they just roll into whatever.
And I think that's what's so nice about having a provider within your home environment or, you know, whatever setting we decide to is much of the clinical information is coming from those parent interviews and from the observation.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, even we know that when parents fill out an evaluation, and you probably see this too, is there's things they don't put down because they've accommodated them for so long that you don't even think about your child needing them until somebody specifically, you know, point blank asks you and you're like, oh yeah. You know, we just integrate it into what we do as a parent, which, you know, it's a coping mechanism to be able to handle that stress and everything going on in our lives, but it doesn't help our child when we don't see it. So yes, it's definitely a benefit.
Yes, definitely. And we have just different strategies that we use. And I I just want to say there's a bunch of more than these ones, but I just wanted to lay out like the most, I guess the simplest ones.
And I know, I think a lot of parents use these, but they don't equate them to maybe ABA therapy tools. Because when I look through your stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, we talk about these all the time, at least some of them. So I'm glad you're going to touch on this.
Definitely. So, you know, there some of these strategies are going to be helpful to work through those foundation skills and prerequisites. And some of them are going to be directly to teach the academic skills as well. Something as simple, and like you said, you know, a lot of people have them out there, a visual schedule, right? You know, how that schedule gets followed throughout the days, having visuals. And something important about the activity schedules, there's so many formats out there. I think with Pinterest these days, you know, we can see and find so many. But some things to keep in mind when building a visual schedule that are going to be crucial for them to be effective. So the first thing is, you know, what is the child's level of communication? Can the child attend to the icon? Is the icon big enough? Is the icon a generic icon? Does it need to be a specific picture? We have clients that, you know, we can just write it down for them and then they follow it, right? But then we have clients that we need to make the pictures bigger, and not only they need to be bigger, but they need to be real pictures of where he's going.
Right. Yes. Because a symbol doesn't mean as much to some children as the actual image itself.
And then, you know, even if you do have the actual picture, you still need to do what we call pairing, which is basically putting the, you know, one in one, right? So if you have the picture in the schedule, we need to guide the child to point, to look, make sure that they're looking, and then guide them physically to that part of the activity to make sure that they're making that connection of like, oh, this is what it means. You know, that
we can't assume that that connection is there in that child's brain. Yes.
Exactly. Yes. So yeah. And then also, you know, things to consider when building up a visual schedule is how many steps do I need to put in there for my child? You know, do I need to break it down where I do maybe just 3 or 4 activities and then a break, and then we redo it? Should we do it together? I have it already beforehand?
Exactly.
So just different things to consider, because we love going on Pinterest and finding different resources, but it can get, you know, you can get carried away and maybe
You can never get off. You need a visual schedule to get back on to your task too.
Yes, definitely. So I think it's just important to consider, you know, what's going to be the most suitable format for your child.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. And then we have also, like the first and then. So we, it's officially called the Primack principle, but we call it grandma's rule. And, I don't know if, you know, your grandma did this to you ever, but, you know, typically grandmas will be like, okay, first eat your veggies and then you can go and play, right? Like that's how it goes. Or first clean up your room and then you can go and play. So the part about the first and the most common mistake that I see out there with it is that they will put two aversive things. Like first we're going to do math, then we're going to do reading. So how this should be used, it should be the first portion of it should be the non-preferred task or the aversive task. And the then portion should be something extremely motivating. So again, working through that motivation on, you know, like, okay, eventually I'll have something that is not going to be aversive, or that is going to be an easier task for me to do as well.
Exactly. I think when we put the two tasks that are the hardest, because they have the most attention span in the morning, that that's just going to work and doesn't always.
So, definitely. And then another strategy that we use sometimes is token economies. As well, token economies, you know, there's so many, I think it's your previous slide, but that one.
Yeah, it was the previous one. Okay.
That one, basically, it's, you know, exchanging tokens for something else preferred, right? So you may want to be motivating your child to work for Legos. So every time he answers the questions, you may not be able to deliver a Lego, but instead you can give him these tokens that are going to represent that once he finishes all the tokens, he can actually go and play with Legos. So something to keep in mind about this, you know, no child, or it's going to be very interesting to find somebody who will only work for the stickers or for the smiley faces, right? It's it's not going to be motivation enough. They may like them, they may enjoy it, but if the task is hard, they may want to have a backup, you know, that they can exchange it for. So just kind of like that consideration for the token economy is that they need to be able to exchange it for something else. So it's kind of like, think about it as money. They can buy, you know, backup things to do with them.
Exactly. And it's kind of like, you know, that rush that kids get when they play a game and they level up or, you know, something like that. It's all kind of the same thing. Or, you know, as we as adults think, oh, I just finished the task. I'm okay with that. But yes, it's kind of building them towards that. So it's not like bribery, but it definitely helps them to see their progress towards an accomplishment.
Yes, and, exactly.
Yeah.
So like it's a little bit different than bribery in the sense that bribery, we will be more like used to say, okay, you know, if they already are, let's say, throwing the materials from the task and they're already having problem behavior. And then we say, if you stop, I'll give you this. So that will be more like bribery as opposed to beforehand, you know, before we get started, you know, what do you want to work for? Right. Everybody works for something in this life.
Exactly.
So what do you want to earn, you know, for this hard task? So like you say, this allows them to measure that progress and see how far they are from earning that little reinforcer.
Yeah, that's great. So, okay. So then the next one is social stories.
So the next one is social stories, and there's a lot of research out there that it's perhaps mixed research and social stories. But I know that a lot of families really enjoy creating this for their kids. And the same as with the visual stories, the visual schedules, just some consideration, you know, to keep in mind the level of the child, how much wording you're going to put in them, perhaps what kind of visuals you're going to put in there, the size of the story, how many items you're going to cover per words for each page. So those things. And there's actually a book on Amazon, you know, how to create social stories. If anybody just looks it up like that on Amazon, they will be able to find more guidance on how to put them together. But social stories, we sometimes use them in combination with other strategies. And that's how ABA, we provide ABA, you know, in combination of multiple strategies, not just one strategy alone. But they can be helpful just kind of preparing the child on what's coming next and practice role playing.
And especially for new situations that you know your child is going to be subjected to. And parents think about this with the holidays coming up. those are one of a great use for social stories. I know I grew up with autistic tendencies. I didn't tell you guys this before we started, but I had to program myself how to talk to people for the longest time until I did a lot of nutritional things. And now it's not something I deal with anymore, but to just train myself how to introduce myself to people, how to talk to people. And so those mental social stories helped me to progress through and, you know, function. in those settings that were very uncomfortable for me. And I found the same for my kids. So yes, it's an incredible tool.
Yes. And you know, I think as an adult, we kind of get some social stories, I guess, in a sense, when we get a manual for something, right? Or when we get policies or procedures for something, they kind of prepare us for something ahead. So that's the same purpose for social stories. It can be helpful for, like, you know, when the schedule of homeschooling can be disrupted, or when there's going to be a new difficult class. So many great uses for sure.
The one nice thing about homeschooling is we don't have as many unforeseen interruptions. Well, maybe some homes do, I don't know. But our home, it was, you know, pretty easy to keep the schedule pretty much the same. But again, you know, there are things that happen, and to prepare your child ahead of time for those with these resources is a great way to do that, especially for kids on the autism spectrum who hate change. So.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And then we have another a couple of strategies in this slide. And the first one is behavior contracts. And this one is for our older kids, where they have, you know, perhaps not only they're older, but they have more advanced communication skills, and they're able to go through the whole contract. And, you know, the contract is going to be a paper only, unless we pair it with, you know, specific consequences. And when I talk about consequences, I mean good or bad, right? So if we're going to develop this contract, it has to be very specific. You know, child X, Y, and Z, I'm going to complete my math and reading within this amount of hours. And after I do for 5 days, I'm going to be able to access, you know, an outing or going to play in the park or, you know, something that they like. And this is how that's going to be delivered. I'm going to go with my family for this amount of time. So it has to be specific. And then we need to make sure that we follow through. So if he did his homework within those times, we need to promise. So that, you know, allows them to actually be effective. And then for incidental teaching, it's a wonderful technique, especially, well, I think for any age, but basically it allows us to just go through different learning opportunities in the natural environment when they're, you know, working on just natural skills that maybe during free play, maybe during social community outings. It's just basically capturing those opportunities to teach different skills. And I think this is a wonderful opportunity for homeschooling. You know, perhaps once you have done your curriculum at home in a structured way, you can take it to a museum or perhaps take it to the zoo. And then, you know, kind of transfer that knowledge and make it more applied.
Exactly. That's why unit studies work so well with my oldest. He actually did unit studies through high school, because getting his hands on something to learn was so important to integrating that into his understanding.
Yes. So. And it's so much fun. You know, learning can be fun. So I think that's a... when we do our training for our therapists, we focus a lot on that too. You know, it's not because we're teaching something has to be boring. It can still be fun and it can still be effective. So that's a wonderful strategy to just use in those opportunities.
Yeah, definitely. Those are some great tools.
Yeah. Okay. And then the next strategies are a little bit more for specific skills, like academic skills. So if you want to teach just, you know, let's say a child how to solve a math problem, or perhaps you want to teach a child how to, you know, identify specific items in a map, let's say, there's a strategy of just breaking down the task into smaller steps. And that we call it task analysis and chaining. So what that means is, if you have a whole task, you know, that may be a little bit too much to grasp, you want to break it down into smallest steps. And then those smaller steps, you want to teach them one by one. And then you're kind of, you know, going to group them together. So perhaps you start with the first step of the task, and then you go to the next step after they got down the first one. Or you can do it backwards, depending on, you know, how they respond. So teaching things like, you know, I mean, this can be used for anything, but just some examples can be, for example, teaching a child how to tie their shoelaces, or perhaps, you know, like this visual that we have in here, how to get ready for school or how to come back home.
Because there's a lot of different details involved in that. And you can get kind of like the deer in the headlights look, you know, when you tell your child to do things like that when they can't mentally break it down.
Yes, definitely. And a lot of the task analysis, I mean, I put a visual in there, and sometimes it's good to use those visuals that you can prompt the child to go through each step, like, you know, brushing their teeth, and they may want to have each step of the task. Right. But sometimes you don't need a visual, and you can just guide the child, you know, physically to through each step, and then make sure that you're fitting yourself back after they're becoming a little bit more independent.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. And so chaining basically is then when they learn each of the individual steps, eventually you want them to be able to progress through that at like a link, you know, linked together.
Exactly. So for example, let's say that, you know, we'll just take this task analysis, right? You know, it's, I think this task analysis was intended for coming back home from school, or, you know, finishing schoolwork. So what are the steps that you need to do after that? You know, you hang up your backpack, you take off your coat, you hang it up, you take out your folder. So how you want to start teaching it is perhaps you want to start teaching the first step. So you will guide the child physically to hang up the backpack, and then you will focus on only teaching him that step, and then you will help him do the rest. But once he has the first step down and he's able to do that consistently, independently, then you add another step. So now I'm going to require that you hang up your backpack and that you take off your coat. And then you're kind of moving progressively throughout the task. Some other tasks may need to be doing backwards depending on what's easier for the child. So you may just teach the first step, the last step on the chain, and then you help him through the first steps, and then you kind of work your way backwards. So it's just different ways, but basically it's kind of like breaking it down, and then you're going to break down the task in the amount of steps that your child needs. So some kids need, you know, taking the one side off first and the other first, and then some kids just need to take it off at once.
And just make sure it gets on the hook instead of on the floor.
is important. Yes, definitely. And then another strategy that we use sometimes, and this can be great for combining with incidental teaching, and this is called video modeling. So these sometimes we use for social skills or for play skills, but also for a task that may be hard, like problem solving. And it's just a video of the task that you want to see. And we have the child watched it. And then when he, once the child has watched it, we help him do it on his own. And you know, a lot of our kiddos love technology, so this can be pretty effective because they already are attending to some type of device these days.
I heard it said by someone I interviewed a while ago, and she said it's great for our kids to see someone do something like socially wrong on a video, because then it isn't like you're personally condemning them for something that they do, although they see their own actions in that other person and then will oftentimes correct that, because then they see how socially awkward it is when someone else is doing it, not when they are. But, you know, it takes a certain level of understanding for a child to do that. But
And I mean, you can also use it for, you know, showing like the way that you want them to see. Like you can show them the incorrect and then the correct, like a more correct way. And sometimes we like have to create those videos specifically, but you can also choose videos that, you know, may already be created, like in cartoons or in different things that you just want them to be able to associate that image and recreate it themselves.
Right. That's great.
Yeah, definitely. All right. And then we have in here another, and this is one of my favorite strategies. I don't, like I said, we don't work a lot on directly academic skills because of insurance guidelines. But if I had, if I was working in the schools, I think this is one of the strategies that I will use the most. And it's called direct instruction. And direct instruction, I put a link at the end. So you will guys, you guys will be able to see that at the end for the resource. But if you guys log in into that, it's the National Institute for Direct Instruction. Mm-hmm. They have so many programs that are amazing. They have curriculums already pre-made for all kinds of learning levels, academic levels, that you can go and access that curriculum from them. They have an online app as well for different subjects. And basically what the reasoning behind direct instruction is a script that the teacher or, you know, the person acting as a teacher will be reading, and then it will highlight in a different color what we're expecting the response from the learner to be. So sometimes at the beginning can be a little awkward just reading off of a script how to teach a child something. But once you see, there's a reasoning behind that script, and then once you go through each, you can see in this book, they're pointing because they're supposed to make specific movements with the finger once they're reading and once the teacher is reading the script or once they were expecting the child's response. So that there's a lot of research out there behind this strategy that I will highly recommend all of the parents, you know, providing homeschool for their child.
I know, to teach a child to read 100 easy lessons.
Yes.
It's an easy method for parents to use because you're always doing one-on-one. And so it's something. And I don't remember, I was just reading a book the other day and talking about indirect instruction. And I thought, oh yeah, that's kind of what we do. And
yes. And it's really good because, I mean, you can still use it in a group setting, but you will just expect a choral response from the group instead of a single response from one child. But there's there's a lot of books on Amazon. I put some examples at the end as well. But there's a lot of books out there for reading, math, and so many other subjects. But I highly recommend just to go and check it out just for different strategies, especially if there's like a hard subject that, you know, your child's struggling with learning.
Right. And you don't exactly know how to teach to it. And so this would give you a script then to go off of. So you aren't fumbling with yourself going, well, how do I get this child to understand this concept? And it's a back and forth dialogue. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
So you know instantly if your child is getting it or not.
Yes. And then another component of direct instruction is that, you know, most of the times the script itself is going to guide you when to move your child to the next lesson. So for example, in the case of this book, you're not able to progress through a lesson from one to two until the child displays the mastery criteria that it says in there. So it's very clear, it's very specific, and it's, you know, once he's done with lesson one, he's done. He doesn't go back to that lesson one.
Because so it repeats it reinforces and repeats. And so it's kind of like a cyclical type of learning. So you don't have to do that. So we have a question from one of our viewers. Jay says, where do you find these teaching tools? And I'm not exactly sure if that's a question about what we're talking about now or what we've talked about previously. So maybe you want to answer that both.
Definitely. So at the end of our presentation, I have some links for you guys, but if we're talking just about direct instruction, the link will be National Institute for Direct Instruction, .org. And, that will give you a lot of curriculums for direct instruction. In general, for the teaching tools at the end, I have another link in there. We have our website, of course, so you can find more information in there. And we have amazing research studies in there, too, that you guys can look through. But on top of that,
box type thing, too, that I saw on your website.
Yes. And then I added also one of our colleagues' website because she does more work in the classroom setting as well. So she calls herself Behavior Babe, but she is a behavior analyst that also she's located in Hawaii. And she has a lot of very parent-friendly information on how to use these tools. So I linked them in there for you guys as well for the other resources different than the direct instruction.
Great. Well, Jay says thank you.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then the last strategy that I had in there was when, if, you know, we do have families that they do homeschooling for all of their kids. So sometimes they will act as a teacher for the entire group at once. So when we do see that, you know, we have, different group contingencies, again, you know, combining the visual schedules, combining the direct instruction. But then sometimes you may see that, you know, well, this child is really paying attention and finishing their work, but this other child is not really. So how can I help them to work together? So putting together
that answers another huge question that always comes up in our support group. How do we do that? So that's great.
So having those group contingencies is really helpful, just, you know, to make sure that everybody is on track, but also that they're everybody's motivated through the same goal. So there's different ways of doing group contingencies, but one of my favorite ones to do is called the good behavior game. And again, it's just a really fun strategy because it's kind of, you know, it's literally a game. So you want to lay out 2 to 3 behaviors that you want to see. I want them to be in their seats. I want them to be looking at the materials and completing their work. And then, you know, if they're doing that, they're going to get perhaps tokens or they're going to get points. But then whenever they don't do those behaviors, so like let's say they're out of seat, they're going to get a different point on this board. So kind of like how it's shown on this picture. And you can see on the corner that it says point limit 5. So if they go over 5, they lost the game. So they don't earn that fun activity at the end of the game. But if they didn't meet the limit and they were under that limit, then they can go ahead and earn what it was promised for their break, basically.
So it builds team, like a team mentality between your children, which, you know, we definitely want instead of them fighting and competing against one another. And so you've got their individual schedules, but then you've got this whole team thing going on. I love that.
Yes. And then, you know, what happens when you start seeing this across the schools is that, or, you know, in homeschooling is that each kid will be like, hey, sit down before she sees you, or, you know, come on, do your work, because we cannot get another point. You know, we're closer. So everybody starts like helping each other. So it makes it a little bit easier for the teacher, you know, instead of having the teacher to be telling each kid. And it's really fun. Honestly, it just becomes really, really fun when you're working through it. And yeah, so those are like the main strategies that I wanted to share on how to incorporate APA for school services, for homeschooling, for just in general teaching. And, you know, like I said, we put at the end some resources for you guys, but I hope that these are helpful for all of our families out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And now that we have shared all of these great things, some people may be wondering, you know, how to access these services. So I'm going to hand it over to Kathleen. So she will give us more information for sure on this.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Arlette. That was such good information. And, I'm just so glad that you were able to kind of piece those things separately, because oftentimes we just think of ABA therapy or just therapy in general, and we don't really think of how different components can be so effective in like I was telling you, these are big questions that we have all the time. And so for parents to know, oh, this is, you know, a resource that we can use to help answer those questions or work through those issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, you know, I think because of the coverage that it's mainly right now provided for children diagnosed with autism, we often think about ABA as a treatment for only autism. And ABA can be used in so many other applications. And one of them
is behavior in a lot of kids.
So. Is all over the place. So, you know, I think Kathleen is going to cover some more information on how to get coverage because of those layouts.
Yeah, definitely. And we can start in Texas. Our biggest group is in Texas. That's where we started. And I didn't tell you guys the kind of the background behind Sped Homeschool. I actually started the Texas Homeschool Coalition brought me in to create their special needs department, basically. And then Sped Homeschool spun off from that as we realized the bigger need and went from there. So a lot of the people that are in our group and what, you know, follow our page are from Texas, but we have grown since then in this last year. So it's great you're going to cover Texas first, because I think there probably are a lot of people that want to know.
Great. Yeah. And we chose to cover Texas as it also is one of our core service areas. So we serve two major hubs in the state of Texas, one being El Paso and the second being Killeen. We also, as an agency, serve statewide throughout the state of New Mexico and have a small hub in Anchorage, Alaska. But we can also speak generally about applied behavior analysis coverage throughout the country. The coverage for applied behavior analysis is typically dictated by having a diagnosis of autism. So right now, applied behavior analysis is considered a medically necessary, safe, and effective treatment of autism spectrum disorder. And many states have passed autism mandates, which means by law, small group health plans and individual plans must cover applied behavior analysis for any member diagnosed with autism. So for example, the state of Texas has an autism mandate that's been in place for many years now. And the language of each state law really differs. So it's important to just become familiar in terms of what protections you have within your current state of residence. As an example, the coverage in Texas is limited after the age of 9. So if you are a child diagnosed with autism in Texas and are under a state-regulated health plan, by law, that plan has to cover applied behavior analysis up until the age of 9.
Mm-hmm. What does it limit the range as well as, you know, what part of, you know, where on the spectrum the child has to be to be able to get those services as well?
That's a really good question. So in every case, it's up to the clinician to make a case that what they're recommending in terms of the dosage or intensity, how many hours a week that's medically necessary. And so through the process of assessment, we take a lot of data and we submit that data to the insurance company to demonstrate that, if we're authorized to come in and provide treatment, this is what we're going to work on. And this is why these interventions are medically necessary for the child. So definitely a child that is more severely impacted would likely be prescribed a higher dosage or intensity of treatment. Mm-hmm. And through our process of assessment, we would be basically rationalizing or making a case that it was necessary. Really good question. Mm-hmm. So insurance typically authorizes our treatment on 6-month treatment terms. And so it's not unusual to extend the authorization for another 6 months and another 6 months. And I think the great thing about applied behavior analysis is we can come in at multiple points of life. As we know, children are dynamic and changing. Our main goal, of course, is to support those natural supports so that we can transfer the skills and slowly fade ourselves out. But if we've successfully faded out and time has gone by and a new need has popped up, we can always join the family again and help them through that.
That's a good point to make, because I think sometimes you do hit those plateaus where a child is doing well and then you kind of fade out, but then you wonder, am I walking away from all of my help if I do that? And so it's a good thing to know.
Yep. Absolutely.
So head to the next slide.
Sure.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you were done with that or not.
Yep. So another big question is, what is the cost of treatment? Again, this really depends on your health insurance coverage. Many of the state Medicaid plans that have opted to cover ABA cover ABA at 100%. The small group health plans just vary by plan. So sometimes families will be responsible for an annual deductible. Sometimes they'll be responsible for a copay and coinsurance. We've seen copay applied monthly, and sometimes it's per session. So it really depends on the individual plan. the research on applied behavior analysis says the earlier you start and the more intensive the therapy, the more effective it is. So our treatment right now, you know, can really range based on the child's needs, anywhere from 10 to 40 hours a week of therapy. So if you're receiving intensive therapy, even if you have health insurance coverage, it can be expensive, just covering co-pays and co-insurance. And so within the resource section of our website, we actually have several grant foundations that have helped families, one of those being UHC Children's Foundation and another ACT Today, that families can apply for assistance with some of the co-pays if that's a barrier.
Right. And I know parents wonder about this is, you know, if my child is doing 40 hours a week, that becomes school, you know, that, and we try to tell them, don't try to do more on top of that, you know, that your therapy is school. If you're doing that much, I mean, even students who go to school full time don't work intensively that long. So definitely that's a good point to make, is that, that range can be there.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the best point of contact, if you're not sure if you're covered and to what extent you're covered, what out-of-pocket expenses, but just contact an ABA company, because most are really happy to do that work for you. So, for example, when families contact us, we take some basic information, including the insurance information, and then we provide what's called a complimentary eligibility review. Most ABA companies do this for families. So with that basic information, we would contact your health plan and verify, is this child covered for applied behavior analysis? And if so, to what extent? What out-of-pocket expenses?
So there isn't any surprise costs when you do start. You know ahead of time what it's going to cost.
Exactly. So I thought we could just talk through really briefly the process of intake if families are interested. And again, our process is pretty similar to what families could expect from any ABA or organization within their community. They're not quite sure on how to identify local resources because this service is provided through many health plans. A good point of contact would be the online insurance directory. So families can simply search autism or applied behavior analysis as a specialty type, and typically you'll get a full list based on your zip code of all of the ABA providers in the community. Autism Speaks also puts out a really great resource guide, and they can select applied behavior analysis, put in their zip code, and they'll get a full list of providers. I will say that they're great about keeping their resource guide up to date as well.
That's good.
Yeah,
because you don't want to be going to links that don't exist and feel like you've just been running in circles for an hour and not gotten anywhere.
Yeah, so,
definitely.
Exactly. So in terms of our process, families can access care a number of ways. They can hop on our website and complete an online enrollment form at a time that's convenient. They can call us directly. And again, most ABA providers have these processes in place as well. So we speak for most. And then on our website, if families opt to schedule a telephone intake in advance, they can do so. And we do our intakes in both English and Spanish at this point.
Great.
Yep. When they speak with a care coordinator, we'll do a basic interview, so learning a little bit more about the family's unique needs for trying to acquire support by an ABA provider. We also, of course, do the insurance eligibility review and financial counseling, and then we compose their clinical team. And so a big part of that initial intake is learning more about the family, their culture, the individual needs of the child, so that when we put together a treatment team, it's not just who we have available locally, it's who do we have that's going to be the very best fit for this child, and if we don't have someone who's currently on our team that's going to be a good fit, how soon can we find that person? So we also integrate a family meet and greet, which I'd really encourage families to ask their ABA provider if they're able to do a meet and greet in advance. Mm-hmm. And basically what this is once we identify a treatment team that we feel will be the very best fit for that family, we do an introduction. So the providers go out to the home, they meet the child, they meet the family, and then we'll do a separate call after that to check in with the family to ask, how are you feeling about this pairing? Do you think that this is the best fit for your child? 99% of the times it is, and sometimes it isn't. And then we go back to the drawing board and identify another provider based on the family's feedback.
That's great, because you sometimes get started and think maybe this isn't good, and then I'm already stuck in this situation, and so I feel like I kind of have to follow through. But it's good that you give them, parents and families, those options, because then they feel like that we want to be on the best page we can when we start this process.
Absolutely. And we always encourage families to speak up. Just because they feel like a specific provider is not the best fit doesn't mean that provider is not skilled. It could be, you know, we've had families ask for someone who's very energetic and who can get on the floor and play with their child and play chase and be animated. And then other children prefer someone with a more calm demeanor. And so every child is different. And, you know, while we bring the ABA expertise, we always say parents are the experts on their children, and we want that to be a partnership.
Mm, that's awesome. Yes, you don't always hear that. So definitely those are things as parents to be looking at when you're looking for a provider.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then we initiate treatment. And after that treatment is initiated, of course, we also do quality assurance check-ins. So the services that we provide are provided on a tiered supervision model. And so the person coming in and providing that one-to-one therapy is a registered behavior technician, and they're overseen by a certified behavior analyst like our LET. So our LET would be doing the initial and ongoing evaluations, working directly with the parent, creating a treatment plan, and then guiding that one-to-one therapist to implement the plan.
Mm-hmm. Great. Many eyes on it. So it isn't just a one person perspective, which is, it's great.
Exactly. And so just lastly, wanted to say too, you know, we know that parents in general, and especially parents of children with special needs, often are working with multiple specialists. Yes. Every specialist has recommendations through their own specialized lens. Incredibly complex to navigate. It can be incredibly complex to try and coordinate one provider with the next. And so we and many other ABA providers too, with your authorization, would like to be working together. We say we have a common mission to help support the child in reaching their full potential. And so we really should be aligned in that. Part of our services, you know, outside of the direct clinical care, is to coordinate with those other providers and other supports in the child's life.
Exactly. It's so good to have a team. And I know, especially for parents who sometimes get questioned about, you know, is your child learning anything, to have the support of the people that you're working with and professionals saying, this mom is doing an incredible job. And, you know, just even to be, you know, that assurance that, you know, I'm not failing my child by choosing this route to educate them. It's a good thing to have a well-equipped team working with you, especially when your child has such complex issues. And sometimes it looks like you're failing everywhere you go. And yet, you know, these people are noting there's progress being made. And even if anybody else can't see it, you do.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this really comes into play too, even with medication changes, for example. Because we are doing so much observation and taking data, oftentimes, you know, we also can go out into the communities for families, which can be challenging for a lot of families to go to the grocery store, to take public medication, for example, go to the dentist, get a haircut. So we can go with you and support those trips. But another you know, our LET has worked actually with quite a few physicians when there's been medication changes and have been able to provide the behavioral data that those providers aren't able to access all the time. So that coordination of care can be really powerful.
Yeah, definitely. That's great.
Yeah. So these are some of the providers that we're in network with in the state of Texas, but we do work with all major health insurance carriers and all other service areas.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then your team.
Yes. And so I know we're running a little bit low on time, so I will be brief. I just wanted to share the faces, since they couldn't be here with us this evening, of our care coordination team. We have Katharina Whittington, who is our health insurance coordinator, is very skilled in navigating those benefits. And then Alvarez and Melinda Shaw, just to the right, are our two care coordinators.
Great.
Yes.
And then these are the resources you were talking about. I should probably copy and paste them into the feed of this video after we're done. But behaviorchangeinstitute.com, that's your website. And then you have a /resources, which it's right on your main.
Yes, you guys can navigate
under parents. I think it's under like family resources or resources, and a lot of things on there.
Yeah, and in there you can have a lot of find a lot of toolkits that Autism Speaks provides. You can find the different grants that Kathleen was referring to. You can find different information on ABA, just in general, more information for the families and how we work with other providers like school providers. Yeah, and then we have some resources there for more information on how to get access and care, and how Kathleen was mentioning just researching autism and ABA within your health plans directory can also be helpful. And then on the next slide will be just some more resources on the specific strategies. Yes. Yeah, and then you will see some of the portions of the website that I was referring to, where she covers more, and you'll find a lot of videos in there as well, which I like that she puts together, because it's very parent friendly.
We're going to have to put her up on our free therapy resources.
Yes.
That would be good. I don't even think we have anything on ABA yet on that page. So that would be.
Yeah, definitely. She has a lot of great videos that make it information very simple, because, you know, sometimes with ABA, we can get very complex on how we explain things. So I highly recommend her. Yes. So I highly recommend watching her videos. They're just very parent friendly and very fun and easy to grasp. So just different information. But I really hope that this can be a little bit more helpful and just extra resources for the families, you know, when building those skills for teaching, and also when teaching specific academic skills as well.
Well, thank you so much, both of you. This, I mean, we've had so much good content, and we've definitely filled the hour. But Jace had a comment here. She said, "Great information. Thank you. My son started ABA this year at 14, and it's been a game changer. Wish we had started sooner."
So, it's never too late. I just want to say that, you know, when I get that comment for parents, I always say, don't feel bad because you didn't start today. You're starting right now, and that's amazing. So don't feel bad. That's great that you have it going. And yeah, I'm glad to hear that it's been a positive experience for him, for sure.
Definitely. And yeah, it's you don't beat yourself up as a parent just because you discovered something when you discovered it. You just use it when it was put in front of you, and it will turn out, I promise you.
Absolutely.
Just the way it was meant to be. So, yeah. Well, thank you, Kathleen. Thank you, Arlette. You have just been a wealth of information. I'm so excited just that you were able to share this and get some information to our community about how they can access your services or other services that are provided in their areas. This has been great because, as we said through this conversation, these are big questions that our parents ask, and you have solutions. So that's awesome. I just thank you for, you know, your time tonight and just sharing all that you have to share.
No, thank you so much for having us. I am really happy that we were able to come in here and join. I was telling Kathleen, it almost feels like a coffee talk because we were just really excited to come in here.
It is. I know. I when I interview people, they're like, that was so easy. You're just so easy to talk to. I'm like, yeah, just don't think about the camera and you'll be fine.
Yeah, it will be really nice. But no, we truly enjoy being here, and any information that we can provide in the future, we'll be happy to do so for sure.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we should get your services on our website. I don't think I have you on as a partner organization yet, but we'll work on that.
So. Absolutely.
All right. And so thank you for all of you that joined us tonight. And those of you who joined us on the recorded session next week, we have a very special guest again, and someone that is very well known in the homeschooling community, Andrew Pudua, who is the owner of IEW. And he's going to be talking about teaching writing with dyslexia and dysgraphia. And so that's going to be an exciting interview next week. But until then, let's keep the conversation going. You can join us in our support group where we're always talking about all these types of questions and more. Or else you can check out our resources on www.spedhomeschool.com. And we just thank the Learning Disabilities Foundation of America for partially funding this broadcast, and also from donors like you who keep our nonprofit going. Thanks, everyone, and have a great night.